Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Her Voice, Ladies Who Write. Today, we're fast-forwarding the time to late 18th century United States. Before I get started, I would like to issue a brief thank you to Professor Kingston for this unique project opportunity, as well as Nicola for his guidance on the technical aspects of production. And I've got to say, throughout this time, I've looked into many admirable writers and thinkers of different cultures, but one of them in particular has really landed my interest. Now it is my chance to finally share her tales with you, so without further ado, I will now get to the introductions. This American author was born in Hartford, Connecticut. As a utopian feminist novelist, as well as a humanist thinker, she goes by the name of Charlotte Perkins Gilman. During her lifetime in between the 1860s to 1930s, she wrote many brilliant novels, as well as short stories. These works of fiction were rather popular. By the same time, Gilman was also a successful lecturer and intellectual among sociologists with her works of nonfiction. She has also established a Forerunner, a magazine that became a platform for her and numerous other writers to freely express their ideas on women's issues and on social reform. The Forerunner included many essays, opinion pieces, fiction, poetry, and excerpts from novels. All of these served as a way to encourage the women's rights movement at that time, as well as to inspire and influence the Americans, males and females alike. As one of the pioneering sociologists of her time, her formal education was rather inconsistent, especially since Charlotte had to move around a lot with her single mother in her early childhood years. Although later in life, Charlotte did end up attending the esteemed Design College of Providence in Rhode Island, and that is the place where she spent the majority of her time. Despite the fact that her sociological education was largely self-taught, she was considered a successful and well-known sociologist regardless. Not to mention, at the same time, a feminist pragmatist, author, and lecturer as well. She died in 1935, but many of her fictional and non-fiction works remain classic and thought-provoking to this day. In the eyes of critics, her work is often described to infuriate, delight, and engage her readers in thinking critically about social issues by challenging societal norms. As a female writer with profound thoughts that have transcended her era, many of her fictional works are still relevant in addressing social issues of the 21st century. This is true because after looking into her work, I realized that her stories were able to speak insightfully on many deep-rooted issues that still remain to this day. After all, she was considered a brilliant writer for her unparalleled ability to project sociological concepts and principles into contemporary media and writing that is both entertaining as well as it is relatable to her readers. Now, I want to focus on talking about one particular short story she wrote in her life. Charlotte married the artist Charles Stetson in 1884, where she gave birth to a daughter. At the same time, she wrote her most famous short story, The Yellow Wallpaper, a semi-autobiography inspired by her own experiences in suffering from hysteria, for which is now known by the present world as postpartum depression. At that time, the field of medicine had a lot of misogynistic prejudices. Women in the public sphere were often scarce, since they were often discriminated against. As a result, the world of medicine was predominantly composed of male professionals who have very little understanding of the female body. At the same time, not much research nor effort was put into women's reproductive and mental health either. To sum this up, doctors in the 1900s were incapable of properly diagnosing and treating postpartum psychosis, and instead this condition was often mislabeled under general hysteria. For a condition that is often out of people's control, women themselves were to blame for the consequences of it. Prior to the 1900s, hysteria has also been historically a very misunderstood disease. Where in the Middle Ages, the symptoms have been tied to supernatural evil and witchcraft. And we all know when a woman is diagnosed to be a witch, she would often end up tied to a pillar and be burned for it. These cruel acts stem from the irrational fear of the supernatural evil. In the past, when science cannot explain a concept, people often resorted to religion and Christianity. Therefore, despite the cruelty of witch trials, they indeed believed that they were delivering justice in God's name. This irrational fear of witches has alienated women who are suffering from mental health conditions from the rest of the society. This also sets back women's place in society as a whole, since the public eye is directed toward them. And if they were to act in any slightly peculiar way that is perceived deviant or blasphemous towards the church, they were often scrutinized or excluded from the rest of the society, or worse, prosecuted. Therefore, let's just say that women were way more self-conscious about their manners and looks for a reason. They cared because society and the public cared, way more than they do for men, where the deviant ones who stand out were often picked out. Then later in history, the social conditions for women got a little better as pseudoscience gained more popularity over the supernatural hysterics. Women were no longer being burned on the stake, since this is when people began to associate hysteria with the woman's uterus. Many hilarious and unusual treatments were brought about at this time, one of which includes carrying a bag of salt around. The scientific reasoning behind this was that the uterus would be repelled to the scent and not make a fit. Even later in history, when studies of psychology and the brain began to gain traction, Sigmund Freud labeled this as an exclusively female disease with, of course, discriminatory implications. All these pseudoscientific prejudices constitute an outdated explanation where the woman's general physical or spiritual weakness was to blame for her condition. Thus, instead of getting proper treatment and receiving psychological counseling like the modern days, 18th century women were often prescribed with tonics, bed rest, and many other peculiar homeopathic treatments of that time. For instance, most of them were locked up in their rooms, banned from attending to their daily work or any social event for that matter. And we all know, as today psychologists have found out, being locked away without any mental stimulation can often worsen one's condition as it becomes harder and harder for them to resume their regular life and routine. Charlotte documented this process of mental deterioration in her most famous short story, The Yellow Wallpaper. The story follows the life of a woman who was married to a physician named John, who then had a baby with him and suffered hysteria, or known today as postpartum depression. It did frustrate her the way her husband and her brother, who are both male physicians, did not believe that she was sick. She could not express this doubt in John's expertise to people, so she wrote it down with phrases like perhaps and the feeling of helplessness when she realized that there is nothing she can do. In her recovery, a majority of her time was spent in a plain room with nothing to entertain her thoughts but a hideous wallpaper. In the beginning, this loneliness and boredom have caused her to be a restless emotional mess. Her physical conditions also began to weaken as she started to lose the passion and excitement she once had in her old regular life. As the story progressed, she became increasingly obsessed with the patterns and colors of that wall, and came up with many questions and theories as to why that is the case, in order to preoccupy her mind. At first, these thoughts were rather common for any bored person sitting in a room. However, throughout the story, these thoughts have turned into obscure theories, obsession, and paranoia. She was quite self-aware and knew that she would be deemed crazy if these theories were to be revealed to the maid or her husband, so she kept it all to herself. People around her, including her husband, thought she was getting better, since she seemed to have gained back her appetite and strength. But the reality is that her mind had made up a whole mystery that she is on the path to uncover. This is when her life started to feel like it has meaning again. She began to see shadows moving behind that wall and soon became convinced that there is a woman trapped behind that wallpaper. In my opinion, this could be seen as a symbolism and reflection of herself and the fact that she is feeling trapped in that house. It could also be that she wanted someone to relate to, who could understand her situation that she presumably does not have an understanding of herself. All of the male voices in her life have been giving her very misguided advice on her condition. And to this day, society tends to always associate male voices with authority and expertise, especially when they're physicians of high standing. This is a very real problem that still exists today, where women have always been told how to feel or how to act by others who do not necessarily have an understanding of women as individuals. Graffini addressed this issue in Letters of Peruvian Woman, where the French society was at fault for making women lose their value and individuality by perceiving them as ornaments and objects of scorn. Christine de Pizan also provided an explanation in her book as to why this is the case for women. She explained that women themselves are not at fault for being perceived in a negative light, and what society or other males think of women do not define the identity of woman as a whole. De Pizan further elaborated that it is because most of them with the power to preach and influence, aka the male scholars, are often not acting in women's best interest, as they have often used literature as a tool of vindication, out of their own deep sense of insecurity, potentially over one single bad experience with women. It is true that not all women are good and virtuous, just like how not all men can be good. Despite many misogynistic beliefs of women being unfit to rule due to their physical and mental limitations, there are actually countless historical examples of female figures who were virtuous and clearly did not lack their own ability to reason. Their voices were just muted over all the prejudice, hate, and vindication. In contrast, their good acts will be forgotten over the ages when women are denied proper education. As a result of historical and traditional reinforcement, the feelings of self-doubt and dependence will always remain in the thoughts of modern women, to a certain degree. Gilman has captured those feelings of frustration perfectly in The Yellow Wallpaper, from the first-person perspective of a woman. As the reader, I got to see the protagonist in a different light than the other characters in the story. To me, she was an intelligent and sentimental being with complex inner dialogues, who also happened to feel sick with a presumed condition that does not define her. I got to see and relate to her boredom as well as her lonely inner life, rather than a one-dimensional character who is just simply suffering from insanity. It also makes sense as to why other people in her story did not try to see her in a different light, since her way of calling for help was projected into simple household requests that others could understand and expect out of a woman. For instance, asking her husband to change the wallpaper because the color and patterns irritated her, when in reality she was actually irritated and unhappy with the general situation she was put in. But how could she put that into words? Since she never dared question her husband's decisions and competency, because after all, he is a professional physician, and it should be a given fact that he locked her up for her own good. Society teaches young women and girls to not question the way they're expected to behave. They're meant to simply act the same as everyone else, every other girl. There are also no coping mechanisms for their individual grievances. This is a phenomenon that still exists in modern culture, where girls do not know how to cope when they feel different from the rest. This can be seen in the movie Clueless, where the story follows what you would call a typical American teenage girl named Cher. Whenever she got sad or depressed, her single dad would give her his credit card, since there is an expectation that young girls are simple creatures who can easily be impressed and made happy with material things. This developed Cher's toxic habit of turning to retail therapy whenever she is feeling down, since it was the only coping mechanism she knew how, and it was the only coping mechanism the way society tells women how. This does provide instant gratification, but after that short wave of gratification fades away, women would often feel sad and empty for apparently no reason at all. Because after all, they were not given a reason to feel sad. Because when simple women were provided with everything in their one-size-fits-all happiness formula, they were expected to be happy. If by then they're still not happy, then they must mean that they're broken. In the end, women would get blamed for their sadness. The changing role of women had played a big part in leading many medical advances throughout the ages. Take hysteria, for instance. The causes associated with this disease went from being the incomprehensible supernatural evil, as well as the outdated pseudoscientific explanation of woman's manipulative nature, to actual diagnosable mental conditions that are out of their control. Only after women have fought for their equality and political rights, they have finally opened up doors and opportunities for themselves to be understood in the society. It is no doubt that Charlotte was among one of the many women that helped abolish some of these harmful medical prejudices with her work in the yellow wallpaper. But this battle is not over yet. There are still many harmful stereotypes and prejudices in today's medical field that still targets women or people of color. It is up to us whether or not we want to open the doors of change by educating ourselves and others. Society and its culture are often highly affected and mendable by individuals and the way they think. So go use your voice and start a conversation with someone today. This is your host, Leizu, wrapping up on today's topic of Her Voice, Ladies Who Write.